Good evening. Welcome along to the Radio City Legend. I'm Steve Hoversall. After a weekend which saw Liverpool beat Manchester United, but of course the other Manchester team come out on top against Everton. I'm sure we'll have a variety of different callers on throughout the course of the next hour. So if you want to talk with Graham Sharp, he is ready, available and willing. Whatever you want to talk about Everton-wise, 4720967. And we haven't got John Aldridge in tonight. It was the former player's Christmas party. Let's just show him right now. I do know that. I texted him before, so we've got a much more capable individual whose head is far clearer today in Stephen Warnock. He wouldn't do that, Stephen, you know, before a big work day. He wouldn't go out on the Christmas party.
Well, he's probably fed up waiting for you to take him out in this week, our Christmas party that we've been promised for the last 5 years.
Good shout.
Actually, it was the Liverpool player's Christmas party last night, so tell us some tales about previous Liverpool players' Christmas parties. What did you used to get up to, Stephen? He's looking at me like, oh, no, you never briefed me on this one.
You can't ask me that.
Come on. What was the best one? Was it fancy dress?
Yeah, fancy dress was always a good one. Wondering who's going to turn up. And then we used to go down Matthew Street. We were just saying...
Matthew Street?
Yeah.
What, the team?
Yeah, go down Matthew Street.
Excellent.
But then sort of camera phones came in and things like that. So even if you went down there, Twitter... or social media, suddenly everyone knows where you are and they're on top of you straight away, aren't they?
So you're in the grapes doing karaoke sort of thing?
Yeah, you should be able to do that.
Stephen's got some stories here, but he's not letting on, is he?
Not ready for radio.
And was one of the players the organisers? Is that how it worked?
Usually,
Yeah, so who would that be?
Robbie
Fowler?
Yeah.
Local lad.
Yeah, just...
knows the scene.
I think we'd speak to a few people around the area. We used to go to Aldo's bar as well.
Did he give you it for free?
Did he? You're joking, aren't you? You don't remember?
Yeah.
What about you, Sharpie? What about your Christmas party memories?
Yeah, it was the same sort of thing, into town. But Stephen quite rightly said it's changed so much now. And you see them, you know, going abroad or going to London or whatever. But you've got to be very careful. I think you just have to look at what happened to the Arsenal players in the last couple of weeks. You know, everything's been highlighted there. So... it's difficult now, you know, and I think the football world has changed where players have got to be, pardon me, more careful. But certainly nowadays it was, you could let your hair down.
Right. Can I just say hats off to the Everton first team before we get on to the proper business? So someone I know told me a story about something that happened at Finch Farm the other day. The first team is all through in 100 quid each. And then the staff who worked there had a penalty shootout. Look, you didn't tell me this, so don't worry about that. Someone else I know told me.
This is the first time I've heard of it.
So I think there was $2,000-$3,000 on offer there.
Right, okay.
And of course, staff who were not playing staff had the opportunity to win that for Christmas. And I thought that was brilliant.
Who won it, do you know?
I do, but I don't think I should say it on air.
Yeah, you should.
No,
you?
I shouldn't. What a great idea. You know, in a modern day where players have got loads of money and they've essentially gone, there you go. And I believe Marco Silva and all the team watched this happen.
Yeah.
And it's a really good idea.
Good.
Just to get everyone feeling as part of one family. No?
I'm trying to think who's won it.
Are you? You see, you should know this. I shouldn't be telling you this inside information. I just think it's a really good way of bonding.
So no football staff at all allowed in it?
Someone who worked behind the scenes footballing wise. Anyway, I'll tell you off air. Don't worry about that. Let's talk about the proper business at hand.
You're going to be dunking, wouldn't you?
No. Yeah, so basically, it could be anyone. You could have been like the cleaner in the building.
Oh, right, okay.
Could be like a member of the technical staff or something like that. He's going to get on his phone now. Fine.
No, I'm just thinking.
All right, Liverpool against Manchester United. Excellent performance. Streets ahead of United, Stephen.
Yeah, if you're a Manchester United fan, you'd be very worried at this moment in time that your team is so far behind and looking like they're going to be nowhere near for quite a while. The likes of Pogba being on the bench, Mata, players who can change a game, make things happen. Pogba obviously didn't even make an impact. They didn't even get on the pitch.
How does Pogba not get in that team?
Well, I don't think he's been good enough himself, if he looks at himself.
Well, you think he's worse than some of those United
players?
No,
I don't think he's been worse, but I think his attitude stinks. So it's the manager stamping his authority. But then if the manager wants to be in a job, you need to get your best players performing for you. And he knows that Pogba is capable of being a fantastic player. We've seen that before at Juventus and at the World Cup. I just wonder whether the Premier League's suited to him. That's my biggest question.
Not a great United side. I mean, Liverpool were great.
But you've still got to beat them.
Yeah.
You know, but I just think, we talked about it before, about what they think Mourinho would do, coming part of the boss, and you're thinking United aren't great. But I said to Stephen before we come on here, that atmosphere in that dressing room must be toxic. Mm. And if you've got an atmosphere like that in the dressing room, you're not going to win many games. And it's all right saying Pogba, and I've been the same. I've been disappointed in Pogba since he's come over. I don't think he's what he's all cracked up to be. But if you want to get the best out of him, you can't go and castigate him in front of the press, you know, the week before a big game or 2 days before a big game. And I just think there's problems in the whole squad. I honestly thought, and I know Stephen mentioned it off air about, you know, they've qualified for the Champions League quarterfinals, or the next stage, sorry. But I thought you'd be out of job today. I honestly thought with that performance, and I thought the way things are going there, the support of distance himself from him, they're not happy with him either. The football's not what you'd expect from Manchester United. And they're looking at it and thinking, Liverpool are miles ahead of us in the way they play and everything else. And I just think, and the way he reacts after the game as well, and he comes out and he walks out of press conferences as well.
He blamed it on David Moyes, didn't he, and Louis van Gaal after the game. And he said, I've been left with players that aren't fit, that aren't sort of physically...
Well, get them fit.
He'd had 3 years.
Yeah.
Oh, this is his third year now, isn't it? So when you're looking at it like that, that's not good enough. That's a bad, bad excuse. Mm. You look at the influence that... Even... I'm going really short-term here. Ralph Hasenhüttl at Southampton. Yeah, straight away, players running through a brick wall for the guy, sprinting, more sprints than they've sprinted in recent weeks, and suddenly they believe that they can get something for their manager. It's your manager. It's any job. Mm-hmm. Any job that you walk into, if your manager can get a tune out of you, perfect. You enjoy coming into the building every single day. You want to work for that guy. You'll get something out of them. Yeah. The big concern that Manchester United have got now is they've got Cardiff, Huddersfield, Bournemouth, Newcastle. You don't win any of them games, he's gone. And all of a sudden, it can be, they should, on paper, have 12 points out of them games.
And does a top manager want to come in and deal with the squad that are currently there as well? Have they got a problem with the successor?
If a new manager comes in, the first thing you're trying to do is get the players on board.
100%.
And I just don't think the players are on board at the moment. You know, I think you said too many fallouts and everything else, and that breeds a bad atmosphere around the place. You know, when as players, when you're winning, Liverpool players, when they come in, if it was today they come in or tomorrow, whatever kind of thing, everybody will be bouncing, looking forward to going on the training pitch. Wow, great camaraderie amongst the squad. I don't see that at Manchester United. I think the next day in for them, they'd all be like, heads down, don't really want to be here.
Mane spoke about it after the game, didn't he? They interviewed him after the game and said, how do you feel at this moment? He said, just can't wait for the next game. Full of confidence, ready to go. But that's come from the manager. He breeds that into them, and it pushes that onto the players coming out onto the pitch. It's the same at Everton this season. Everton are a completely different team to they were last year. They've just been beaten the derby, but the fans and the players still feel that there's an improvement. And that's a mindset that the manager puts into you, that you're believing in what you're doing and you're seeing something coming out of it. Now, if you don't have that as a player, you've got no chance. Mm. If you don't believe in what your manager's doing, and for me, I don't think they're believing in what he's doing.
No, definitely not.
Okay, Everton's performance against Manchester City on Saturday. Is it still a hangover from the derby?
No, it shouldn't be. Not at all. A lot of people try to say that, but listen... That's gone. It's disappointing. But you have to move on. You have to move on quickly because the games come thick and fast. I thought going there at the weekend, listen, I think the majority of people have thought it would have been difficult to get something. But I thought we started quite well. Richarlison has a great chance. That goes in. Listen, you never know. City will probably still go on and win it. But I think it was a case we didn't take the chances. We had good chances at important times of the game. Mm-hmm. And we didn't take them. I'm not saying... We were better than City. City were the better team and always looked a threat. But the disappointing thing for me would be, again, you go away from home and we talk about clean sheet and you look at two of their goals from probably two of the smallest players on the pitch. You know, Sterling comes on in the centre of the goal, unmarked, two headers, and you're thinking, wow, you've got a back three that's 6 foot three, 6 foot four, whatever. And I just think that at times we need to defend better. And I know people come on tonight and talk about haven't got a striker and we haven't got a threat, which, you know, Dominic Calvert-Lewin done a job there, he scored a goal, whether they give it to him or they decide it's an own goal, we'll wait and see. But I just look at it and I just think that we were our own worst enemies. I thought the first goal was a poor goal to concede. You know, I think Mina just booted it and gave possession away, and you don't do that against City. So there was one or two worrying things for me there. The fact that we conceded the goals in which we did do, and some of the performances as well were not up to what were expected. So Man City, I think, fully deserved to win.
What about the way you set your team up against Man City? So three at the back or 4-5 at the back?
This is exactly what I was just about to ask Sharpie. I mean, for me, going away from home against Man City, never play a three at the back. Mm. I just don't think you can do it, because as soon as your fullbacks go forward, you've got the pace of Sane, you've got the pace of Sterling, you've got the guile of Bernardo Silva, and you're looking at it and you've got Mahrez. Now, these guys know where to find space, don't they?
Yeah.
And if you're running, for me, I've played left of a three, and I've played full-back, and I've played wing-back. And whenever you get caught out, if a winger's running at me, I'm used to it, so I'm quite comfortable. Mm. You get a left-sided centre-back suddenly getting dragged into a left-back position, he doesn't want to be there, hates it, can't stand being that far over and that wide, doesn't know what to do, not used to it at all. And this is what people don't understand about that formation. Whenever you play a three at the back and you've got the left-sided player or the right-sided player, they don't want to be there. They don't want to be playing 1v1.
They get isolated.
They hate it. Can't stand it.
So it was a massive gamble to actually do it.
There's a reluctance to go out there. Yeah, I think most teams these days are better, and especially a Guardiola team. He knows how to find space. He'll have set his team up during the week and said, listen, Everton quite fancy playing three and they like a four as well. If this is a three, this is how you're going to get at them. And they found a way every single time.
As you said, I think the goals you can see on the top of the two headers, but the first goal, which sets the tone, if you like. For me, Jordan Pickford's great distribution. Now, he plays the ball sideways to Yerry Mina, on the edge of the box. Now, for me, why don't you just push them up to the edge of the box, put a diagonal to the left back who was Dania, or try and find Dominic Calvert-Lewin, not with a fighting ball, but you can ping balls into your chest and whatever. And I just think as soon as you start playing that deep against them, who will come and close you, and I'm not saying that I don't think Yerry Mina is the best on the ball. I think he's one of those where if you put him under pressure, I think you're going to get what he done in the first goal and give away a mistake. So I thought the way we conceded the first goal, I'm thinking, why did we do that? You know, and then Jordan comes racing out his goal and the boy puts it in. But I just thought the goals we conceded were really, really poor. Mm. And I think, whilst I agree with Stephen about the formation and everything else, I just think that two-headed goals, Raheem Sterling, a header, and it's
should never be the case, should it?
No. And the boy, who's a decent player but hadn't scored for umpteen games, he scores two. No, not good enough defending for me.
Right, the boys might have picked up on something you want to talk about. If you never rung before, please give us a shout. 01514720967. 4720967. At Radio City Legends with Graham Sharp and Stephen Warnock. We're going to start on the red side of things with Paul, who's given us a shout. Evening, Paul.
Evening, Steve. You're okay?
Hello, mate. What do you want to talk about? Stephen Warnock's here.
Hey, Steve. You're okay?
Yeah, very good. Thanks, Paul. You?
Can't complain, mate. Good. I just wanted to talk about the Champions League draw and just reflect on the past couple of weeks, to be honest.
Okay.
So the draw being Bayern Munich, first leg's going to be at Anfield, second leg away. Yeah. And you've seen a fair bit of Bayern, haven't you, Stephen?
Yeah, I've watched quite a lot of Champions League football this year. I've seen Bayern play quite a bit. Now, they are more suited to the Champions League. I think they're a very dangerous team. They've got an ageing squad, but they have one of the best strikers in world football in Lewandowski. Robin and Ribery are still capable on the day of producing top form for 60 minutes, if you like, just because of the age and what the bodies have been through recently. But this is by no means an easy draw for Liverpool, but it's a good draw. I sound like I'm contradicting myself when I say that, but I think if you can get a couple of goal lead in the first leg and go to Bayern with a lead, I think the two goals is a perfect score, because then Bayern have to really come out at you and they open themselves up, and that plays into Liverpool's hands.
What do you reckon, Paul?
Yeah, I mean, well, looking at the draw beforehand, if there was one team really, I'd take them. They'd be my first choice, and that'd be Porto, just based off how we played against them last season. Other than that, or the other six teams, I think it was, that we could have been drawn with, none of them are, they're all quite top draw, to be perfectly honest. But as I say, by, it could have been worse. It could have been worse. Even if we'd got Dortmund, I'd have feared Dortmund a lot more than I would have Bayern.
I'd agree with that. I think Dortmund are a lot better team than Bayern Munich at this moment in time. But they are a young team. They're inexperienced within the Champions League. The difference with this Bayern Munich team is there's a lot of experience of winning the Champions League, being involved in it year after year. And you can say, well, what's experience within that? You learn how to stay in games. You learn how to go to big stadiums like Anfield. And you learn how to soak up pressure and you learn how to deal with them situations. So, yeah, I agree. It's one of the better draws, if you like, but still a very tough one.
Yeah, I mean, as you mentioned, they've got the likes of Ribéry, Lewandowski and Robin. I think Ribéry and, as you say, Robin are probably the twilight of the career. Still good players, but the only fear for me would be Lewandowski. But in saying that, we've got Van Dijk. I know he's going to miss the first leg, but if we can get the job done at Anfield, then I think that'll take care of itself in the second leg.
Well, so, what is getting the job done at Anfield? What would you think, Sharpie?
Not to concede.
Not to concede, is
not
that?
Not to concede, keep them in the game. Yeah, yeah. Not to concede, I think.
But to also score how many?
Yeah, listen, if they don't concede, they've still got a chance, you know, because away from home, you expect Liverpool will pose a threat. So Liverpool will always get a goal away from home. So if Liverpool don't concede at Anfield, I think they've got a massive chance. A massive. And I don't think the atmosphere at Bayern will be anything like what it would have been at Anfield second leg. So I think, in a way, an advantage for Bayern is the fact that the first leg's away. Advantage for Bayern is that Van Dijk doesn't play. You know, so there's two, you know, positives.
I'd rather lose Van Dijk for the home leg, though.
Yeah.
I'd rather lose him for that because I think the atmosphere will carry the players, whoever comes in, just give them that little bit of an added extra. And the beauty of it is for Liverpool at this moment in time is that, yes, they've lost Van Dijk. Matip should be fit by then. Joe Gomez, touch and go by then to be fit. Mm. So you're hoping that you'll have two more centre-backs ready for that game.
To be honest, they're all tough, aren't they?
Apart from if you'd got Man United, you'd have been laughing. I'm not waiting to happen, but that. Yeah, you'd have been laughing.
You're not even joking,
no,
either.
No, I'm not.
Paul, just very quickly, I see it said underneath your name on my computer screen, Lovren and Cater. Did you want to mention these boys?
Yeah, I mean, Lovren, I have a bit of a love-hate sort of thing with Lovren. He'll do flashes of brilliance and look like a competent defender one day, and then in parts, like yesterday, he gives the ball away so sloppily in stupid positions, and he's got a real, I think most players have, but he's got a real big cock up in him at any given moment. He come through it unscathed yesterday, thankfully, but just the pass from defence to midfield, the number of times he gives it away sloppily, is just, I'd be worried if Gomez isn't back.
Yeah, I think that's the difference, isn't it? We know Joe Gomez is a more complete player than Lovren, but Lovren's still got that experience, knows where to put himself, good areas. He'll know he's not as good on the ball, but he'll know defensively that he can be very sound. I do agree with you. He has got an error in him. Tell me, apart from Van Dijk at this moment in time, a centre-back that doesn't. You look throughout the leagues, there's so many mistakes happening in the league. The way people are trying to play, the way managers are trying to encourage the centre-backs to play out from the back. And that's just part and parcel of football at this moment in time. There's very few who are the complete defender.
Paul, we've got to go to a break, but thank you very much indeed. Great to hear from you.
Thank you.
Paul, the first caller on the Radio City Legends. We've got Graham Sharp and Stephen Warnock. You'd like to get involved, 01514720967. It's 7 minutes to seven. Loads to talk about on the Radio City Legends tonight. Graham Sharp and Stephen Warnock, our guests in the studio. I'm Steve Hoversall. It's a massive night for Tranmere Rovers and Southport because at Hague Avenue... Is it Hague Avenue? Is it still Hague Avenue?
Yeah.
Is it not the Merseyrail Community Stadium or something?
I think you might be right.
Mersey Travel Community Stadium? Something like that. I'll Google it in a moment.
Yeah.
Our producer, or one of our producers, Matty, is a mad Tranmere fan, so he should
give it
that
big thumbs up straight away. Hague. And then Charlie said,
I'm sure it's the Mersey Travel Stadium. I'll find out.
It used to be that.
So Southport facing Tranmere, and this is the second round of the FA Cup, the replay. So the winner faces Tottenham at home. That's a prize, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a prize.
This is huge for both teams. Mm. When you look at it and you think the money involved, what it can bring to people. And I just think it's a fantastic... this is what the FA Cup's all about, isn't it? Yeah. This is what we want to see. We want to see local derbies against from our teams and obviously around the country as well, but this is brilliant.
Players going into that tonight thinking, yeah, let's win it kind of thing, but they'll be already looking at...
Wembley.
Tottenham, yeah. Tottenham next week. This is what we've got to play for. So I think it'll be a great game tonight. I think it will be. I think both will be... both at it, you know, what a prize at the end of it.
I just love the fact that Southport side has a lorry driver, a teacher and a professional dog walker in it.
Brilliant.
And that's the story of the competition, isn't it?
That's what it's all about.
That's what you want to say.
Apparently it is the Merseyrail Community Stadium. Matty's not.
But you'll get some of those Southport lads who have been working today doing what you've just said.
Dog walking.
And then come to the game
good
tonight.
Training.
Yeah.
It'll be fit. Let's get back to the phone lines. Well, actually, we will. We'll get to Dave in just 1 second. Everton fan, just a quick one for you, Sharpie. This is from Tony, who's listening in. He says it was the 57th minute on Saturday when Seamus Coleman was taken off by Marco Silva. Mm. The last time that happened, non-injury-wise, was back in March 2016. Is Saturday a bit of the beginning of the end for Seamus?
No, not at all. Not at all. Listen, Seamus has been great. I think, you know, he's had the really serious injury of the broken leg, and it takes time. You know, and as we talk about a young player coming back as well, there's peaks and troughs. You know, sometimes you start off really well and then you have a little dip in form. That's something I think you'd have to expect from Seamus after the injury as well. But no, I think people are too quick to judge.
Yeah.
And they'll say, but I think the problem with Seamus this year has been in front of him. And the way he's been expected to play, you know, he's been playing as a four. We talked about it before. We 9 times out of 10, Theo Walcott in front of him. I don't necessarily think there's a blend between the two of them. I just think at times Theo Walcott doesn't help him with his movement.
I don't think he helps that he's a right footer.
Yeah, well, yeah,
because you haven't got an overlap. Because Theo always wants to go down the right. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you've got like a Bernard on the other side who likes to drop inside or you swap them over, suddenly you've got a left footer coming inside and it gives you that great option down the line. My best playing days were with Ashley Young, right-footed but left winger. Always wanted to dip inside. So all I had to do was run round him. He either crossed it, the defender went for it, he just passed it to me.
Perfect compliment
and
between the two of you.
And that's what happens. Yeah.
I think he's struggling that way. Definitely, Stephen. He's not. You'd be the first to admit. He's as honest as they come, and he probably know he's played better.
Did his comeback playing so well so early when he came back? Was that an issue? Because the Everton fans almost like, oh, he's never been away.
Yeah, his first game back was brilliant, and you're thinking, wow, kind of thing. But listen, he's got back into the game. Listen, he's doing okay, but the results in the last maybe three games have gone against him. So again, it's easy to try and pick at points. No way. He was taken off fine. He had to change it. He went a different way, but no, he's not.
He's not only 30, far, isn't he? Right, let's get our next caller on. It's Dave in West Derby. He's going to talk about Everton. I think about Richarlison. Evening, Dave.
Evening, Sharpie. Evening, Stephen.
Hi, Dave.
Just obviously following up on the point what you're saying there about Coleman there. You know, just quickly touching on it. Coleman goes looking for the overlap. He goes to the byline. That's Coleman. That's what he does. But you know, looking at City's lineup. When one of them goes down the wing, like Walker, or you've got Mendy going down the wing, you've got Fernandinho.
Fernandinho.
He drops back dead deep then. They've still got the back four. They've still kept that shape, you know what I mean? They're still keeping that back four.
Yeah.
Everton haven't got no one that sits deep in that sort of format there, you know what I mean? So this is going back to what my point of view is on, obviously, Richarlison being the number 9, number 10 at the moment for Everton.
Mm-hmm.
It's not working. He runs his socks off, he gives it 110% every week, but he's not a striker, he's a winger, or he's obviously a floating ghost number 10, where Citizen plays. Now this is getting back to the argument with Bernard on the left, he's not a left winger. Does he go inside and then Citizen's not, he's no good dropping deep, so the argument comes back, we need a striker in January.
Yeah.
Do you need a striker? Do you go out and get a proven, you spend money, or do you go and play maybe, okay, Silva's worked with this fella before. He's got a good understanding with this fella. And I think, personally, in the short term, it would work. Because obviously, 3D and he's the man not sort of like hold the ball up well. You can hit him, you can put the ball from the back to the front, like Gary Mina, hit him forward. Jordan
Pickford, so you take Troy Deeney. Forward. Troy Deeney's the person for you. What do you think about that, Sharpie?
No. No? Not for me. But I agree with what Dave has to say in terms of we need a striker, but I think we've said it time and time again in the show. Is there one about that? I wouldn't say so necessarily. I think it's a tough time to buy in January. And you want what Marco Silva wants at this moment in time for me is to build a team. I don't think he just wants stopgap measures. Mm. I think he still wants to build a team. And I think, you know, well, if something was offered to him that he fancied big time, yes. But I just don't think he'll bring somebody in for the sake of bringing somebody in. Yeah. I think the person he brings in has got to be what's right for him and the way he wants to play.
Who do you think that person is then, Charlie?
I honestly don't know. As I said, listen, go on.
Would you look at the big man himself then from United? Would you be saying him or what?
No, I think that would... No, well, listen...
Romelu Lukaku. But the only thing, about him off
air. Yeah, I just speak to Stephen as well, and they watched him again at Manchester United, and for me...
I understand he's not happy there at United. Yeah, he's a frustrated character, but he was loved by the Everton fans, and that's the thing, isn't it, what it's always being said. Once you leave Everton, there's no... There's the only way you start...
There is, Dave, but Dave, if you... I think if you're in this Marco Silva side now, I think he needs to do more. I think he needs to do more. I look him at against Manchester United right away. The first tackle gets bullied out of it. Don't see him again. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at somebody who's like a heavyweight boxer, and I'm thinking to myself, come on, show a bit of aggression, show a bit of passion. Everton fans love passion. You know that yourself. I ain't seen that in him today, and I think to myself that drives me nuts because I'm looking at somebody who's got the goal scoring threat that he's got. It doesn't show it week in, week out. Yeah, he'll tap one in from 6 yards and everything's great. But I think for us, in the way that Silva wants, you need to do more. You need to be able to get a hold of it. I don't think his hold-up play is great. You know, and I think no doubt his goal-scoring record, you can look at it and say, yeah, fine. I'm not sure if going back for somebody like that would be the answer. But listen, I'm not saying it's not going to happen.
Could he improve him as a player, though, Silva? Because he's a good coach, isn't he? I think he's a good coach, mate. From what I've been told within the game, people speaking to people, it's not just a fact of I'm the manager, that's all I do. He gets out on the pitch and he's teaching people, he's coaching them. I don't think Lukaku will go back. I don't think that'll happen. I think longer term, if Mourinho was to leave, you'll see a different Lukaku at Man United.
Possibly.
But there's so many players out there these days that... You're looking at the South American markets, you're looking at European market. You're not just looking within the Premier League at this moment. You're looking for a gem of a player who can suddenly step up. And that's what your scouting system's there for these days. That's where I think Everton's in, like Sharpley says, it's not about now with Everton. It has to be 5 years, 10 years. And that's what Marco Silva and his staff behind the scenes have to look at now is that player might be right for 6 months, a year, but is he right for 10 years? Is he right for 5 years? And that's the big thing that Everton are trying to get right now and seem to be doing well.
Yeah, and the thing with Lukaku as well. So say he comes back and he has a great 2 years and all of a sudden Juventus want him or somebody else, and he won't give two hoots about Everton again. So would you take that risk?
Well, no. Every time he went on international duty, he said he had higher, loftier ambitions, didn't he?
Yeah. So all of a sudden it changes.
I'm not sure it's a marriage that works. Dave, thank you very much indeed. Some really good points.
Cheers, Dave.
Cheers, Dave.
Let's cram Steve in now. He's a Red and he wants to talk about yesterday's lineup. Evening to you, Steve. Oh, we'll have to switch him. Sorry, I've got him on the wrong buttons here. Oh, no. I'll tell you what, let's see if we can move him back. There we go. We moved him on. Hello, Steve.
Finally.
Hi, Steve. You all right?
Yeah, you're all right, lad.
Go on. What's your point, Steve?
Yeah, just a quick one. A couple of points, really. Made up with the results. Obviously, Steve, brilliant results. We've had our years over the years with Man United, and we haven't always got the rub of the green, but I feel like we did on the Shaqiri efforts, but I think it was well deserved. But I was just your thoughts on the starting lineup in that for the game, obviously, when with Fabinho, Wijnaldum, and Naby Keita. And I don't know whether that's the first time we've started with them three in the midfield before. And it was a massive call. And I think a lot of people didn't expect that starting three you know, starting that game. But it worked out brilliant for Fabinho. Well, it's the first pass. I didn't know he had that kind of pass in his locker to start with, and he bossed the game a little bit. And I was obviously United a poor side at the moment, but I was really impressed, and hopefully it's a sign of things to come with them. Central three, what do you think?
Yeah, I think when you look at when they signed them players, I think a lot of people thought, well, that's the end of Milner, that's the end of Henderson. I never thought that would be the case. I thought it was a case of upping their levels, because when better players come in, it brings the best out of the best players. I think Wijnaldum's been absolutely immense this season. He's been a revelation. His game has gone from strength to strength, both for Liverpool and the Dutch national team. He seems to have got better and better. Yeah. Now, I think there's going to be, from now until the season, that midfield's going to chop and change constantly. And that's the beauty of it. That's why he's done it, to keep people on their toes, to get the best out of them. I think yesterday, the disappointing player for me was Naby Keita. He's not really hit the ground running as such yet. He's still struggling a little bit to get to the pace of it. He's got lovely skill, and he moves with the ball so freely. But for me, tactically, he's just not there at this moment in time. And I think he'll obviously get better and better. You can see he's got that ability. And sometimes as well, we were just speaking off about Everton, and we were talking about Walcott and Coleman. Sometimes you've got to build a relationship with the player next year to understand their game, to understand what works. You look at Robertson and Mane. Everyone's talking about Andy Robertson being the best left-back in the world at this moment in time.
I know.
Mane's making him that as well, but he's making Mane a great player. So it's that relationship. You could go to another club and play with a different player. Suddenly, you're not as comfortable playing in that system, that the way you play with him. So
I don't think it's any coincidence that Klopp's kind of, he's getting the best out of everyone, though, isn't he? So it's, you know, he's improving everyone around him. I think the players make other players better.
Yeah, but
I totally agree with
that. That goes back to the last call again, though, where we're talking about a striker. And you're saying, who'd you get in? And Sharpie's saying, well, you don't necessarily want Lukaku back because he doesn't fit what Everton do. Now, the great thing what Klopp has done this season, and you can say the same about Guardiola, they don't buy unless he fits that system, unless he thinks he's going to improve. And you can count on one hand how many players, or what bad players, that Klopp and Guardiola have bought. And that's a sign of great management, but great scouting system behind the scenes.
It's a really good point about that. Three players that played yesterday who were outstanding were all in teams that got relegated, and Liverpool signed them. Gini Wijnaldum, Robertson, Shaqiri. Now, that is great from the scouting department, isn't it? They've taken three players out of teams that have absolutely lost their souls and gone down.
Absolutely.
And they've made them into brilliant, much better players.
They've seen something in the players, in their attitude, and their standard.
Well done to the scouting department, because, you know, they're fitting in at the very highest level.
Yeah, and that's what Liverpool have done behind the scenes, is they've redeveloped that scouting network, and they've changed the system of how they sign players, how they go about it. And everyone looked at Van Dijk as well. When Van Dijk came into the team or was signed, everyone was saying, is he worth 75 million? Is he really worth that? Is he going to improve us and make us a better team? Well, everyone would say, he's worth double now, if not more.
If not more, yeah.
And that's the crazy thing, but that's where Liverpool have done the homework and said, this will work.
Steve, just one last question. Do you know, obviously on that central midfield area, Henderson, I know he's kind of like, you either love him or you hate him on the cop, but I don't mind him. I just think he's more of a squad player, and I'm one of them old-fashioned types that likes, if I think your captain should be your leader, and I think Virgil van Dijk is that. I mean, the team needs to be really built around him. I mean, in my eyes, he's the best centre-back in the world, and that's not. I don't say that lightly.
No, I agree with that comment.
But I don't think Klopp sees a captain as something that's important. Well, no, I think he just...
I think what the point you're missing, in a way, is that I've seen Jordan work and what he does behind the scenes, and the impact he has on the players behind the scenes. Him and James Milner are so influential in that changing room to the what Klopp passes the message down to them. Now, it might be a change in the summer or in two seasons when Van Dijk suddenly is handed the captaincy, but Jordan's a fantastic leader behind the scenes, and you do need that. I think for
what
him
would
not.
You do, Steve? I mean, would you leave it till the end of the season?
I'd leave it.
Or would you
remain? Why cause a disturbance when the team's doing so well? Why make it
next season?
I think it depends. I think it depends how Jordan's doing, what his situation is within the team. But the other thing when you look at Jordan is that he's being managed very well from Klopp because he had his big injury problems last year. There's talk of an ongoing foot injury. So Jurgen probably knows that was probably the reason why he's brought other players in the summer is he knows he can't play him on every single week, but he plays him in them big, big important games when he knows he might not play for 2-3 weeks, but he's that fit a player. Like the Napoli game, put him straight back in. And he was his main guy.
We've had this conversation before, haven't we, about...
several times, does it matter?
Is the same as what it used to be. Mm. You know, you see the armband getting handed about right, left and centre now kind of thing. But well, I think you can't just ignore what Jordan Henderson's done. OK, he splits opinion, but he's a captain at the moment. And if he's playing, he gets a captain's armband. If he doesn't, he goes to Van Dijk.
No, Steve, listen,
very quickly.
I totally agree with your point there. I think as a captain, our captain should be, you know, first name on the team sheet, and I'm not sure where he's that anymore.
I understand that point.
Good point.
Like, he's a brilliant captain with the players, but listen, cheers, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much indeed.
Cheers, Steve.
Another good call. 7:10. It's Radio City and Radio City Talk. It's the Radio City Legends. Going to do our quiz next. Pens, certain amount of pressure on Stephen Warnock. After
on Christian,
Aldo continually blames him.
The questions haven't
been
but
Aldo's
not
really
last time round. No pressure, Stephen Warnock. John Aldridge might be listening. It's time for pens.
I don't think so, do you?
No, he's probably in bed actually by
bed,
now.
Yeah.
With a headache and stars above his head. Right, okay, well, what are we in terms of Reds against Blues? Where's my score sheet?
Can't 14-7. Find
it. Oh, look, 14-7, exactly double. So Aldo actually blames you for the demise of this quiz. Constantly.
Honestly, he does.
I can imagine. Just the one.
No, you, Dominic Matthew, everybody that stood in for him, right. It's their fault.
He's had a few nights out, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Basically anyone who got things wrong. Yeah. Okay, so 6 penalties to be taken. Let's get that out of the way. And, sorry, that was the tiebreak question you could see in front of you.
Let Stephen go first.
Stephen, where do you want to go first?
Go number 3.
Number 3. Oh, you're going to know this. What round was Rocky Fielding's fight stopped at the weekend? So what round was it stopped at?
3.
Number 3.
Business! Christian.
It's an excellent
No wonder
start
you're
there.
Hiding your head in shame.
Rocky, shame for Rocky. But I tell you what, when you come against someone as good as Canelo, you don't stand much of a chance, do you?
Very tough for him.
I'm sure he'll still be proud with what he did. Let's move on.
5
sharp.
Can I just say as well?
Go on.
I've scored one more than I did in the last game, so I've improved.
But your questions in the last game were awful. 5. Here we go. Right. Everton were beaten 3-1 by Manchester City at the weekend. But what was the score the last time the two sides met at the Etihad?
1-1.
Oh, wow, wow, wow.
Far too easy, this at the moment, isn't it? Okay, one each. One penalty each. Let's go on. Stephen?
6.
Number 6, it's mystery voice time.
Oh, God.
Who is this mystery voice we're going to play on the Radio City Legends? Have you been checking birthdays?
Yeah.
You see, that's the sort of thing that you would do, isn't it?
I don't.
It really is the sort of thing.
I don't.
Right, OK. Stephen, who's this?
I've been to all these teams and it's to come with
a
second.
Oh, come on!
Brilliant!
Excuse me.
Should I play it again?
No, I want to bring back somebody who was here before.
You can't bring back anything.
The questions are awful.
I've been to all these teams and it's
He was out last night, Christian, as well. He was out with Aldo.
Who is it?
Roy Evans.
Yes! Yes! Yes!
I would have to say that Aldo would even get them.
Come on.
One.
Number one. Right. Which former Everton player celebrates his birthday today? Yeah. And how old is he?
He didn't even know the first bit.
That can't
Which
be the
former
question.
Everton player who also played at Birmingham celebrates his birthday today?
Some scene.
And where did he start his professional career?
So hold on, why don't you add another bit to the question?
No, that is the question. Which former Everton player who celebrates his birthday today and started his career at Birmingham. I've gone back to front. I'm not looking at my seat.
He's played for Everton.
Right, I'll tell you what. I'll give you the player. You give me his age. Yeah.
Oh, no.
I would, only because of the Birmingham thing, I would say it's either...
You've got to be right
Pat
with it.
Van Den
Yeah, yeah, there you go. It's Pat Van Den Haar. How old is he? It's his birthday today. Did you? There you go. It's his birthday.
You did not wish him happy birthday.
Oh, some friend you are.
Is that why you put the phone down?
It's his birthday today. He expected a card off Sharpie. He didn't get one.
Either 56 or 57.
56 or 57?
I'm going to see 57.
It is one of those where you don't want to watch schoolboy football.
58.
Oh, you're joking me.
You were just one out.
That's a great effort.
You should be embarrassed anyway, because whenever any of your mates come on this quiz, you get the question wrong about them.
Oh, I can't believe that.
58 years old. Are you going to ring him after the show?
Yeah, we'll do have to wish him.
All right. Stephen?
I'll go two.
Number two. Last time Liverpool faced Bayern Munich at a competitive fixture was a win in the UEFA Super Cup. What was the score?
Oh, my God.
This is a bit tough.
2-1.
To Bayern.
Oh, dear me!
3-2 to Liverpool, 2001.
So what number was that?
That was number two. It all comes down to number four.
Yeah.
Well, actually, this is to level it up to take it to the tiebreak. Name the song and the artist.
Oh. Older.
Song and that. Older, you'll get this straight away.
Oh. Billie Jean. Michael Jackson.
Mister!
Listen, he has his DNA, Christian. All right. he's got those. He just looked up something that a Christmas cracker and got those questions.
Tiebreak, who's going to answer first on it?
Give Stephen it.
Oh, that is so bad of you. You always moan.
This is so nice.
All right, okay. Stephen, are you happy with that?
Yeah, no problem.
All right. Burnley hold the record for the most Premier League away defeats in a season. How many defeats did they have? So Burnley hold the record for the most Premier League away defeats in a season. How many defeats did they suffer on the road in this season?
Good question.
I'll give you the season if you want. It was 2009-2010.
Do you know what? I'll actually go...
What's your answer?
I'll go 14.
14. Sharpie, do you go higher or do you go lower? 14 defeats.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
What's the record?
I will go 14 out of 19. I'll go.
It's got to be high.
Pat Van Den Haar. Pat Van Den Haar.
Lower. Lower. Was it 15?
Tell you what, they must have been shambolic this season.
17
games. Wow. 17 games you lose on the road.
My word.
Is that even feasible?
Yeah.
My goodness.
It happened.
Yeah.
All right, 14-8. Let's squeeze another caller in. Radio City Legends, 20 past 7. Let's talk with Matt, who wants to touch on Seamus Coleman. Evening, Matt.
Good evening, guys. How are we?
Hi, Matt.
Lovely to hear you talk sense, Stephen. It makes a change for Red to talk sense.
I'm only joking.
I wanted to lead in quickly with Seamus Coleman, but as ever, I like to be positive. I tend to try and look at things through rose-tinted glasses, really. Mm-hmm. Certainly as an Evertonian, we always look with hope anyway, don't we? I do believe that looking at Seamus Coleman, and he always has worried me, Sharpie, defensively. Mm-hmm. Going forward, he's been wonderful. But as a defender, he sometimes, and I've watched him since he first came into the side, he can have a tendency to switch off and not follow players. And watching that game on Saturday, I know Mina made the error, and you know, obviously the cross for Sterling to head in was disgraceful, the centre-halves. But all their attacks, all their three goals, even after Mina had made the error, all came down the left. And I worry sometimes about Seamus Coleman's ability as a defender. Mm. For me, defensively, Jonjo Kenny is a lot better. But this is the reason I think that Marco Silva's playing him. We lack a natural leader on that park. And the closest we've got to a natural leader is Seamus Coleman. And where the big fundamental difference, or if you want to put a comparison on, is you look across the park at Liverpool, and Van Dijk there has absolutely transformed the defensive record of Liverpool. And I don't think it's just the fact that he's a good leader. It's the fact that they draw strength from him. You know, that there's players on the park that you think, wow, I'm glad he's there. I remember Peter Reid doing it in the middle of the 80s and Tim Cahill being able to do it, you know, 10 years ago or whatever. And I think we really, really miss that. And I think maybe that's why Seamus is being picked. I think Marco has appreciated that we do need somebody in the middle of the park that can say, come on, lads, let's get together. Like when that poor keeper made the error against United at the weekend, Van Dijk went straight over to the keeper and said, come on, it was a mistake, don't worry about it, build yourself up, get on. I don't see that going on at Everton.
What do you think, Sharp?
I don't think that's just a Seamus Coleman fault. I think that's the fault of the team. I think you look at the team and you think, come on then, where's the leaders? And we've had this conversation before and thinking, the team's too quiet. You know, it's Seamus Coleman, who's the captain, and he's not the most vociferous in and around the dressing room. He'll give somebody a rollicking if they need a rollicking, but he's not the most vociferous. He concentrates in his own game. I think we've got a lot of that. I don't think we've got many leaders in the team. I think it's a very, very quiet team. It drives me nuts at times when you think that somebody needs to be grabbed round the neck and told this is what to do. So I think that's something that's been pointed at the team for a long, long time, not just this season. I disagree with you a little bit about say he's poor defensively. I think Seamus, I know everybody likes to see him marauding forward, but I think he can do his fair share of duties as well defensively. Mm. I think Stephen said in the beginning of the show, it was a new formation with three centre-backs and pushing Seamus forwards. So in that formation, you're kind of tended to get forward more than defend, aren't you? And it's like a bit, case you get forward. And that might have been in the thinking of the manager. But listen, for everybody who's writing him off, I don't write him off. I still think he's got plenty to offer. And I think in a team, probably a four suits him more than a three. And I think but as I said to one of the callers,
Sharp, I've got to stop you. We've got to run out of time.
He's got to get somebody in front of him who knows how to play alongside him.
Matt, we'll hear from you again in the future, I'm sure. We've got 10 seconds, Stephen. Thank you very much for your company.
Cheers, thanks for having me.
Intelligent conversation on fullbacks. Never spoken so much about fullbacks, have we, on this show?
Aldo's not a fullback.
not interested at all, is he, Stephen? Thank you. Sharpie as well. Radio City Legends returns right here on Thursday on Radio City and Radio City Talk.